Thanks, everyone. I do love sitting with you all. It's so nurturing. And I'm just going to name, as might have been a little a window into this when I had the giggles before, just aware of sitting in a pretty vulnerable place. As you can tell, I'm not at home. I'm down in Palo Alto supporting my daughter at a sporting event. And I lived here for about 3 years back in the 90s, mid 90s. And I got up early, went for a hike this morning to kind of get my head together about this talk and our time together, and really was feeling into sort of who I was many, many, many lifetimes ago in the 90s. And it was a really, really very challenging time in my life when I was here and I was going to school here and worked here for a couple of years after school, and feeling into a way the resonance of that was definitely the hardest time in my life. And in a beautiful way, that's what led me to the teachings. And it was funny, as I was thinking about this morning and was trying to figure out, like, why was it so hard? I mean, there was definitely, as that was sort of the deep dive into all the trauma that I'd spent much of my teens and early 20s running from. But now I was like, oh, I didn't know the Dharma then. And there have been subsequent times that have been hard in my life, but the level of confusion as in my 20s, just having no wisdom at all about my own suffering or just the nature of suffering, and it was like, oh, right, the sort of pre-Dharma and the suffering, the enormity of my own suffering at the time, because I didn't know how to deal with it. So I'm sitting with that and just aware of this extra a valence of vulnerability that's here, and just wanting to name that, and as it pertains to our time together in this continued exploration of the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes of the heart, the teachings of loving kindness and compassion and mudita, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, upekkha, and this crown jewel of equanimity that we talked about last week, and we may be talking about next week, exploring this week, because for me, it's such an important practice, particularly now in a time, and I don't know about for you all, but I am aware of it, of practicing with a sense of dread that I don't know in the last couple of weeks that has become more prominent. I don't know whether it's back to school and all that comes, or, well, and fires here in the Bay Area and elsewhere, and floods and all the things that are happening, and the Delta variant and Delta plus, all the things that one can be anxious about, and working with the sense of dread. And I was listening to Pema Chodron's book, Welcoming the Unwelcome, and I love Pema Chodron. And I was listening to it. So in the audio version of the book, she speaks about how do we find refuge when we're struggling? And some of you shared vulnerably in the chat about, I'm really having a hard time. And where often the sort of the distinction between what are true refuge in the teachings, as many of you know, what we take refuge in, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and the Buddha, that there was the historical man who sat down after many lifetimes, it said, of cultivating the heart qualities such that in that birth of Siddhartha Gautama, he could awaken. So faith in his way is, I did it, you can do it. The faith that taking refuge in, this is possible. He, as again from him, he would say, I wouldn't teach it if it wasn't possible. And actually, as many of you may know, sort of the mythology is after he woke up and became awakened, and the thinking about teaching, he's like, I don't want to teach. I'm going to sit here under the tree and enjoy this. And the Brahmins from above, like, no, no, honey, you got to go out and teach. They have but little dust in their eyes. Can you help them clear the dust from their eyes? So thankfully, he started teaching. So taking refuge in the Buddha, in the Dharma, and the truth of these teachings. And again, it's like, check it out. I can't quite get the Pali word, but there's a phrase for come check it out, try it on, see if it's true. And as always, with all of these teachings for all of us, Spirit Rock and Dharma teachers everywhere, it's like, check it out. Don't take my word for it. See if it fits. And that was very much what the Buddha said. Try, see if this works. Take what works, leave the rest. So this the capacity to take refuge in that which is true in the teachings, and then Sangha, this community, here, us together, that it's so hard to do this alone, whether it's life or just the practice itself, and that we need to come together in Sangha. So these are true refuges, places of solace in the practice. And sometimes we don't feel like going here, right? When we're really stressful, it's much easier to go to Netflix or to ice cream or chocolate or whatever it is. And being able to weigh in, where do I actually go when I'm totally miserable and upset? And sometimes it's reaching in to this well of refuges that are offered by the teachings, and sometimes it's not. And to reference back to the Pema Chodron book, she references these three circles. There's that inner circle of our comfort zone, of where do we actually go when things are really difficult, whether it's the what's the equivalent of like that warm fuzzy blanket. Some of them will be wholesome refuges, and some of them will not be. Then that next circle out is where we learn. You know, that this is from the book, like we could watch Netflix every night for an extended period of time. And at some point that's not going to be so helpful. It's sort of what else is there to do that can comfort us? And so that zone, that next zone out, is that place of learning, when we can push a little bit on that edge that wants to just be like, no, stay under the covers and eat Haagen-Dazs and watch a movie. And it's like, okay, what else is possible in terms of being able to support the heart? And to reference myself again, at this time that was so, so, so hard for me while I was living in Palo Alto a million years ago, that was when I first picked up my first Dharma book, which was Mark Epstein's Thoughts Without a Thinker. It was one of those books, and it totally changed my life. I was like, oh, this is really helpful. And that was the doorway. But it was the enormity of my suffering, that kind of look around, like, please, God, could there be another way? And there is. So it's sort of that was a pushing into a learning zone. And the third zone that she talks about in these three circles is sort of the extreme stress. And sometimes we can sort of shoot from the comfort to the stress when we have this incredible striving of, I'm going to sit straight for 4 hours, or my first retreat's going to be a month long, or whatever. The ways in which we can really push ourselves too far. And that just creates a lot of stress and trauma and suffering. And how to be able to pay attention as we move to, what zone am I in? Comfort zone, now it's hard, it's stressful. Okay, so letting ourselves rest. And again, I so appreciate in terms of what was very helpful as I've been sitting with and practicing this sense of dread and being able to be like working with it. And you know, that idea of like, sit with it, open it, feel it in the body. It doesn't necessarily mean it goes away. It's just being able to open to it. It's knocking on the door. Hi, what does this feel like? Okay. And then sometimes it's like, I've spent enough time with this particular guest, I'm going to do something else. And when is there discernment around, okay, I'm opening to this. The door has not, you know, there's been a knocking, come in, dread. Okay, this is, I can, you know, sit for whatever, however long with this sense of dread. And then it's like, okay, and now I'm going to do something else. And this, again, the skillful movement away from, as opposed to, I'm going to sit here for however long until it goes away. There's a grasping as if I can make it go away. That doesn't work. And an ego in, I can manage this, as opposed to, okay, this is just here for now. Can I sit with it and not fight against it? And I was referencing that earlier, the degree to which we fight against how we are in this day, how the world is, how other people are. There's a lot of things that we can fight about. Oh, and the suffering that then engenders, because when it's about other people who have the wrong ideas or are doing something terrible, there's a way in which we really separate ourselves from them. which causes a disconnect, right? It's me and us and them, while tempting, and the polarization is brutal that we're living in here in the States, and I think to some degree globally, and it's painful to the heart, because what it's going against the natural inclination that actually we're all here together on this planet that's suffering, as we all are. And this idea of how do we, and again, sorry, as I tend to do, quote a bunch of books, but again, from this Pema Chodron book, she talks about the game that she'll play when she's in a, like in a park or watching people or sitting in traffic, and the game is just like me, and how to sit. And we could even do it with our fellows here and our Sangha here, as we take people in little squares, like, you are just like me. Everybody, I think it's fair to say, wants to be loved, wants a sense of belonging, wants to be happy. Some of us are skillful at it, but some of us have no idea how to do it out in the world. And it's how to be able to have a sense of connection with others. Like, oh, this person who may not look like me or believe anything that I believe or have totally different values, they too want to be happy, just like me. And as a practice to play with it, to kind of see, well, what's it like if I lean into an acceptance of, oh, we're all trying our best. And we may judge others of, like, that's a terrible way to go about it, when we do. Okay. So that's the judging mind. Can we soften in what's behind it? And I want to leave that point and pick up another, this idea of how do we work with ourselves when things are really challenging. And again, this is sort of up for me as I've been thinking about it being back here in Palo Alto, but I wanted to read a little bit from this book. It's The Three Marriages by David Wyatt. And I read it many, many years ago, and then my brother just sent it to me. And I wanted to share this just as an example, one, of the profundity of impermanence. So again, the sense of when we are really in a place that's so hard, it can feel like it's going to be like this forever. But it, you know, it does change. It may feel like it. And sometimes it goes on for years. And the sense of it, all that arises will pass away. Right? The suffering that's here, it will not always be here. It may feel like it. It won't. So to that end, some of you may be familiar with the author, J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter. She writes, So J.K. Rowling famously wrote large portions of the first Harry Potter book in the midst of this, of a caked, slow-moving, mud-walking, desperate parent stage. She wrote, quote, "There was a point I really felt that I had a penniless divorcee lone parent tattooed on my head," she said in an interview. "Living alone with her infant daughter, Jessica, in an unheated Edinburgh flat, she would trudge through the streets, wheeling Jessica to a local cafe and snatch moments at her writing between feeding and comforting her child. It's a help to know that Rowling felt a general hopelessness during much of that time, and further encouragement to know that she kept moving through the mud and kept on writing despite her quiet, private despair. That cafe in Edinburgh now has a plaque where she wrote to explain to whoever sat here actually read it instead of trying to paraphrase it. The cafe in Edinburgh where J.K. Rowling wrote now has a small plaque on the wall outside to explain who sat there with such private, unsung courage. Most likely the place in which we sit and struggle to bring our lives back into balance, into joy. We'll have nothing to commemorate it except a little window in our own memory that opens onto a small stage on which we appeared during difficult times." And I love this image of remembering, oh yeah, she was in a place of such profound despair and hopelessness. Not to say we all have the trajectory of J.K. Rowling, but again, this sense of, oh yeah, we all really do struggle. And we all have moments, that dark night of the soul that we move through. And how can we avail ourselves of the tools that are here in these teachings? One of my favorites is the practice of equanimity. Oh, this too. How can I make space for, this is hard, this is unpleasant. And that sense that I've mentioned most mornings here in the West, of being able to tap into the circle of the Sangha of, oh, right, can I offer this to the circle such that I don't have a sense for each one of us of being so alone with whatever I'm suffering with. And to stay on this Pema Chodron jag, there's a story of she and Jack were teaching in Oakland many, many years ago. I don't remember where, but what part in Oakland, but someone had raised their hand and was talking about her profound suffering as her child had recently committed suicide, and just sort of the unbearableness of her anguish and sorrow. And Pema said, could I see a show of hands to anyone else who's lost someone to suicide? And tragically, a lot of other people raised their hands. And this sense of connection that we can have. And I recently heard the line, I don't remember from where, of like, there really isn't anything that any of us have gone through that some other human has not gone through. We have a different flavor of some kind. And I say that as when I hear it and when I read it, it was just so comforting. Like, oh, right. It's not, the suffering is not personal. And we can be conditioned to believe that these failures, our suffering, or somehow something's wrong. Like, I did something wrong. There's sort of in the American mythology that if you do everything right, you go to the schools, you do all this, then you're going to be happily ever after. Well, who does that work out for? Okay. I saw a tag through my email box that Sharon Salzberg and Joseph are teaching a class of, yeah, they're suffering. So what? But just how do we allow it to just to be part of, yeah, this is part of the day without spinning out, I've done something wrong or I'm not okay. It's just like, sweetheart, this is hard. It is hard to be human. It's hard to be human in August of 2021. Can we find a steadiness in this place of suffering that, okay, all that arises will pass away? Can we take comfort in this truth? It says, like, to abide in this truth brings great happiness. Of this too, can we sit with, oh yeah, this too, this body ache, this suffering, this bout of cancer we may be facing, the suffering of our relatives who may be suffering, oh, this too. I want to share a poem. Called Tasting Heaven by Robert Bly. Some people say that every poem should have God in it somewhere, but of course, Wallace Stevens wasn't one of those. We live, he said, in a world without heaven to follow. Shall we agree that we taste heaven only once when we see her at 15 walking among fallen leaves? It's possible. And yet, as Stevens lay dying, he invited the priest in. There, I've said it. The priest is not an argument, only an instance. But our gutsy emotions say to me that we have tasted heaven many times. These delicacies are left over from some larger party. So I'm going to invite you to close your eyes. And just to check in, how's the body? Where is the body resting? What parts of the body are resting? And at ease, can any ease be brought in through any micro movements? And I love Robert Bly's invitation of considering the myriad of ways that we can taste heaven in the midst of our suffering. And it is often because of the suffering that we need to look around to find those small bites of heaven that we need it, right? Whether it's tastes of heaven or finding true refuge in those times where it's challenging and in times where it's glorious. The essential step to be able to take in that which is beautiful. So if you close your eyes and just to consider what's beautiful in your life, And for some of us, the list of 20 things might come pouring in, and for others, might be like, gosh, I don't know. So have a low bar, right? What's beautiful? My hands work. Awesome. I don't have a broken bone. What's beautiful in your life? What tastes of heaven are available to you on this day or this evening? Whether it's a glimpse of stars at night, the shadow of the moon. It was foggy this morning here, the taste of moisture in the air. The smile of a loved one, the brightness of someone's eyes. The feel of a soft fabric. How many times do you taste heaven in the course of your day? How do we allow ourselves to be vulnerable enough to be open and available to taste heaven in the sip of a brewed cup of tea? How can we allow these teachings that say, hey, wait, slow down. What's true? What happens in this in-breath? What happens in this out-breath? What's beautiful? Can you give yourself permission to allow yourself to taste heaven whenever, wherever you are, regardless of how you are? Suffering is here. Sometimes it's intense and excruciating, and sometimes it's mild and annoying. Okay. What would it be like to allow ourselves to relax into our true refuges? Places where we find nurturance and beauty. What would it be like to allow ourselves to take in that which is beautiful? And taste heaven as often as we can, in whatever way resonates for you. So, thank you so much for coming, for your kind attention, and for coming along with me on that. And I wanted to share that Maureen had emailed me a quote from Cahil Gibran, and forget not the earth delights to feel your bare feet, and the wind longs to play with your hair. And I read that earlier and I'm like, right, it's heaven right there. So thank you for sharing that. And I want to make this next last portion of our time today an opportunity to hear your thoughts of what came up, or, and also this is a perfect time for any practice questions. So, and I know sometimes a lot of people want to talk and sometimes it's pretty quiet. So however it goes is great. And you can raise your hand, as Tolan invited you to earlier, or you can put in the chat a comment or a question and we'll read it. So thanks so much. And I look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.